If Rippin' Throats gets that warhead back, I'll suck as many dicks as I've got, rip as many throats as I have to.
Don't you think it's strange that there's a way of how you looked and how you act and how you think? Pretend they're not the same as you.
Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Gwintelligence Podcast. I'm H.J. Preller, and we are not joined by David Marver after his in-person, one-off appearance, apparently, here on his own podcast. He's busy flying to, I think, White Plains, New York today. So I'm excited to welcome on our, third Gwintelligence member who rarely contributes, although probably contributes more than Marver still, Chad. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Good to be here. I think we're actually tied because I wrote that one when the Galvez trade went down. I wrote that one article, and I feel like Marv's only written about one also in that same time frame. So
that is correct.
I think we're about equally contributing right now. So it's good.
Right. I don't think we've
good
spoken.
To be number two.
Yeah, we haven't spoken since the big Jeff Dotsith podcast that
yes.
No one could hear.
Right. Classic.
Classic. Classic
great,
intelligence.
Great debut.
I think you said a total. It was very RJ's fro of you on that episode, where I think you contributed about 17 words total.
So I think it was mostly just like grunting or hmming and questioning whatever Dotsith was just like ranting about. Yeah, good time.
Yeah, good times. Good times. I guess people. We hear from you on Twitter, and I do think you should receive some accolades, actually, because what turned into a just a movement of killing Kevin Acey on Twitter, I don't know if a lot of people realize it, but you were the originator of when he would post a picture of his office, you replying immediately, we get it, you're a beat writer.
Yeah, for a while I started questioning myself if I actually had started that or not, because I wasn't sure, and all of a sudden just became a big frenzy. Once it gets into the mainstream of Padres Twitter, once Leisure Fryer starts tweeting something, like, it's really beyond your control at that point.
I mean, it was an avalanche that couldn't be controlled, and you were the one that screamed on the mountain to start it.
Right, and then was buried and was never found or talked about again.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like a lot of us get blamed for being so mean, but you're really the mean one.
I've been trying to tone it down lately. But it can feel good sometimes just to, be creative with some criticism of local media coverage.
Well, so do you think it's toned down because AC's gotten better?
Well, maybe, but I would also contend that the only reason, if we actually believe AC has gotten better, I would think that's only because he just, for some reason, gets every single scoop for, I don't really know why, I just, either Preller, I doubt it, I mean, Fowler must love AC for some reason. I mean, he broke the jerseys, he's been, done some inside the mind of Preller, I believe that was him at least. Pieces. So, I mean, those are interesting. I want to read those, but I don't know if that makes him better.
It might just make him pliable.
It makes him essential.
Essential, he, yeah.
We don't follow, like, at least I don't really follow Togerson anymore, especially after that Solarte for Devers tweet. Because I realized, like, I think somebody tweeted that too. Like, he doesn't really add much to. I feel like I have a pretty curated following section, and I just don't see how he fits in there. But AC still has some scoops.
Well,
so
I mean, Togerson's on the same level of random, like, Joe fan that is out there. Casual fan Joe. And casual fan Derek is really no different than that. And, like, I think I follow, like, 120 people. I don't follow that many people. And I don't have room to follow casual fan Derek.
No.
Right? So, well, like, what am I going to get out?
Some people follow like 1,000, but that's just
like, I don't need to follow Kyle Kraska. Like, Kyle Kraska is not going to give me anything.
Right. I've even been flip-flopping on Dan Szymborski. God, I hope I got that name right. I know he's a past guest of the Gwintelligence podcast, so come back anytime, Dan. but he tweets a lot. And
yeah, here's a secret. I'm not
that on top of my Twitter.
I don't follow him either. I don't like my Twitter timeline getting flooded.
Right. It does happen.
There are like interesting people out there that I just don't follow. And I think, I don't know if people care. I think a lot of people, when they follow you, they think you'll follow them back. And I don't follow back anyone.
No.
Like, I know what I like.
That's how you turn into Leisure Fryer.
Yeah, like, Twitter takes up enough time already. I don't need to add another 900 opinions onto it.
Right. And going back to our original point, especially not someone like Toger's.
No, of course not. Well, I guess I wanted to have a theme for this episode. You listen to other podcasts and you want to improve, and you listen to comments. And I heard some people talk about other podcasts and they're like, you know what? That's the positive podcast. They don't get down on this 48-win team. So I was thinking, you know, maybe we could become the number one podcast, because I don't know if you heard, Leisure Fryers declared that we are not the number one podcast anymore. I'd like to reattain that title someday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Marver's our ticket to it. Maybe we just needed a little Chad infusion here. And along with it, maybe we just need to be more positive. Like, people like being positive, right?
Right. It makes me feel good. It makes me smile.
Yeah. And you know, that's
we know that's what baseball's all about, right there, smiling.
Yeah. And that's why we talk about things like, well, maybe Kevin Acey's getting better. You know, I used maybe.
Right.
I used maybe there. I'm not using a definitive nor suggesting the idea. But maybe, right? We're being nicer to him. I think that's positive.
I feel like he's also toned it down, maybe. Like, we haven't had an office tweet, like a stadium, this is my office tweet, in a while from him.
He does those, but he does them tongue-in-cheek now.
Right. So, because we were successful. We want to feel good here. This is the feel good podcast.
Yeah, there's so much to feel good about. This team's 24 games under 500. We're the second worst run differential, but there's a lot of fun on the field, right? And that's what baseball's all about. It's about baseball fun.
Right. I mean, if we're not going to be having fun, then why even bother being interested in the first place?
What are we even doing here?
What are we doing here?
Right.
What happened to Padres nihilist?
I know. Where is Padres Kierkegaard? Like, there's all kinds of things we could be doing that we're choosing not to.
You know, there's a big pine. Every podcast just expands it more for all of us.
There are, you know, it's a little tongue-in-cheek, and I'd like to, you know, I think we'll make our best effort to make this a as positive as possible podcast, this episode, until Marver returns, and then we can get back to just crushing the team. But there are some actual positives going. Let's start with the first one. Just on Friday night, we watched one of our young, talented pitchers come up. He was pretty good, right? He threw some...
Yep. Good.
The results were good. The results were good for a debut. Certainly,
yeah.
Well, we don't need to get into... Actually, you know what? We're being positive. We don't need to get into the other debut last week.
Yeah.
But Jacob Nix was... was good, and that was encouraging to see. What did you think about his first start?
I mean, it was fun, right? Like, that's also what baseball's all about, having fun. So, it was actually, like interesting. At the very least, it made me much more interested in the team when there's someone of significance actually getting playing time. Did you read that Fangraphs article? I don't even know who wrote it, but essentially about his debut.
I did read it.
I mean, and to basically sum it up, he has a good fastball command, although, like, they use this one gif where he struck out... God, I can't keep track of all the stupid Phillies players' names. He struck out someone, and they're like, look at this location, you know, up and into a left-handed batter fastball. But if you just watch the gif, like, he totally missed the spot. Hedges had to reach across the zone. But, so he has a good changeup, and he struck out like Rhys Hoskins and a couple others with that. But apparently his curveball sucks, which is surprising because I thought the curveball was supposed to be his better pitch. But
that was a scouting report on him, right? And
yeah,
you never know. It's a debut. It's a small sample. It's hard to tell. But I kind of felt the same way. It seemed like a very hittable curveball. And the thing with debuts is there's not a lot of tape on these players, right? And as there's more data available and more video, there's going to be more study and knowledge of what his pitches are looking like. So it's difficult to tell. I will say I saw a study this week. I think Eno Saris tweeted it out, but it talked about, you know, how much sample size you need to start making judgments on pitches. And at least with breaking balls, it's a couple games at least. Like, I think they said that a fastball, you can kind of tell whether it's going to get hitters out in the first start. But I think things like his curveball, we'll have to wait and see. But yeah. But the thing with Jacob Nix is there's nothing to lose. I mean, the whole season is supposed to be basically a laboratory test to kind of figure out what works and figure out what doesn't work. And it's good that we're finally at – for some reason, August 1st happened and the team was like – will now openly acknowledge, you know, now it's time to try some of these new guys.
Right. Instead of Jose Pirela the entire season.
Well, they're still using him. He's still on the roster. But, you know, that's an that's a long-term experiment, Chad. It's still going.
That's an investment.
Investment, yeah. We need we just need to play him more so that we can get more trade value out of him.
So much more value. God,
so much value.
He has negative 0.1 war, B-war right now.
You know, you got to play him. If you
what have we been doing? In 370 at-bats, that's like, oh, God.
Hey, if you want his value to go doing? Up, you need to play him more, right? That's
Sorry.
The theory.
Positive. Yeah. Yes, right. Right.
Anyways, like with Nix, it's good that they've made room for him. And I think people thought I was joking, but as soon as the trade deadline happened, Tyson Ross didn't move. I think I tweeted out, like, for serious, like, cut Tyson Ross. And just call up one of the young guys. I think I said Brett Kennedy, but whoever it was. Whatever young guy, it doesn't matter. Fill in the blank. Because there's no value in holding a veteran pitcher, you know, that you failed to trade and give him more starts in lieu of a younger guy. So I think that's really encouraging that they did finally make that call.
Right, and you know, it kind of, you know, I would think... Right after the trade deadline, because we didn't trade Stammen, we didn't trade Tyson, there's a couple articles that came out that was like, oh, you know, AJ doesn't want to add marginal value to the system. People were like, oh, this means just like, you know, our org guys are better than, like, maybe interesting marginal guys on other systems. Which, like, okay, that's fine, but at the same time, I still find it hard to believe that Tyson, like, someone didn't offer. I mean, it doesn't have to be a prospect. I mean, I don't know. I just don't understand the strategy of holding on to a player because you say didn't get enough value, and then cutting him a couple weeks later for nothing. Like, yes, if you want to maybe, like, stick to the strategy that AJ is obsessed with getting his price, but does that even work when you just release him a couple days later? I don't know. It doesn't make sense.
I mean, I guess my thing, I remember seeing those kinds of mm-hmm. statements that well, why do we want to fill up our single-A roster with more, you know, flotsam? But mm-hmm. the thing with AJ and the reason people have faith in him is because we believe that he knows. And let's face it, guys that are down in like the rookie league or the Arizona league, like those guys are generally – not, you know, they're not valued as highly. They don't show up on a lot right. of the top 10 prospect lists. Esteri Ruiz was off the radar completely when they got him.
I mean, and it might be a big cliche to bring up again, but Tatis was basically unknown. I remember when the trade went down, there's maybe like an article or maybe like a quick batting cage video of him on Baseball America, and that was pretty much the only thing anybody actually knew.
Right, people forget, but
seemingly including the White Sox.
Well, people forget, but Eric Johnson was the prospect.
He was the big piece.
He was a top 100 right. prospect, like, the year before.
Right. He was a failure that Matt Strom, well, is not a failure. He's the failed Matt Strom experience.
Yeah.
But where even is he? What the hell? I haven't thought about him in...
Eric Johnson, he popped up this year. He's in the system, I think. He's in like double A or I think he's in double A right now.
Oh God, there's always that hockey player.
And now he's a reliever now. It doesn't matter.
Of course.
It doesn't matter. We're never gonna see him.
No, he doesn't matter. No. We're being positive.
That is positive.
He's a role.
We are never going right. to see Eric Johnson again.
Oh, my God. It makes me feel so good.
But you're right. Tatis wasn't even a top 30 international signing at the time.
He was not known at all.
Right. And so if you do have faith in AJ, if people that believe in AJ believe that he can find those guys off, you know, the backfields of the Arizona League better than anyone. And what other teams consider a marginal prospect, we believe that AJ knows something more about them. So that's why I'm more on the side of he probably didn't get any offers. Otherwise, he would have taken them. I mean, yeah, strategically, why wouldn't you? I mean, the Cardinals didn't offer anything. So, you know, what?
That's probably more likely. But, I mean, at the same time, it does kind of seem like the team is a bit bipolar with what they're deciding to do with younger players' playing time. Like, did we really need to wait until after the deadline to dump Tyson Ross to, like, get Brett Kennedy up here for a couple extra starts? Like, we knew Tyson Ross was already trash, like, a month before the deadline. We probably weren't going to get anything. Why? Like, I don't know.
I mean, to their credit.
He might build his value back, sure, but...
Well, I mean, just, to their credit, they called up Walter Lockett a few times, right? Like, he's gotten three starts up. He's been on the 40-man for, like, 2 years. I went to the game on Saturday and had completely forgotten, and this is a good statement of the change in the state of the farm system, but Walter Lockett was the 2016 Minor League Pitcher of the Year for the Padres.
According to whom? Matt Fries?
No, this is who the team nominated. This is the really? Team award for 2016 Minor League Pitcher of the Year. And now look where we are. So, I mean, that's, you know, I guess they finally gave him a shot, and he, you know, took a dump on the head of it. But what are you going to do?
I mean, he wasn't even that great last year. What?
How was his 2016? I'm sure it was good. He was good enough that they rostered him onto the 40-man for all of last year and all of this year.
Yeah. So, I mean, the plan is in motion, right? The trickle is turning, will soon turn into the stream, quote if, like, I don't even know, one of the media writers.
Yes.
So that's fun. That's a positive.
It's a positive. But wait, I do think
we need to get back to the positives, like Knicks. we started on him.
Well, it's undoubtedly a positive, right? Knicks flames out, like you need to know, you need to give them time in the laboratory. You need to run the experiments, and then you come to conclusions off of it, right? And Walter Lockett's been awful, but that's also good because now they know that he's not worth a roster spot going forward, and they can replace it with someone more useful and valuable. The same goes, you know, Knicks was very good in the first start, right? It doesn't mean he's going to be good, right? Marv and I talked about what I called the Cordoba effect, right? Where we call up people and they're on fire for 4 to 6 weeks, and then the league catches up to them. And so I'm one to kind of, you know, let's take it easy. Like, it was good to watch. I enjoyed it. He won. He looked good. Let's take it easy before we start anointing him as you know, the next playoff team's number two pitcher. But the only way you get to the point of coming to those conclusions is by, you know, throwing him out there and seeing what happens. So that's positive. Right. That's very positive.
I mean, speaking of anointing people as the future of the team, how do you feel? I mean, how close are you to being convinced the recent, you know, offensive output of Hedges, Renfro, and Reyes is real and not just a second round of readjustments?
Okay, well, from the positive side, let's say that it's been very good, right? It's a good thing that they are hitting right now all at the same time. It's nice.
It's definitely not bad that they're doing well.
Right. No, that's a good thing. And no one should complain about it. Look, Hedges, you go back through his history, I think the past 3 years, he goes through like this 2-3 week stretch where he just destroys everything. Like, do you remember last year he hit, like, how many home runs did he hit last year in the whole year? Like 15? And he hit like 7 or 8 of them in like a 2 or 3 week stretch in the big leagues. The year before in El Paso, right before they called him up, I think he hit just a monstrous couple weeks there.
That was because he got his hamate bone removed, remember?
Yeah. So he was much more spry in his hand. You know, he dropped that weight of the hamate bone and had all kinds of extra flexibility. It's like removing a rib.
So for Hedges, you're not convinced this is
I would say on
all obviously it's not sustainable for all of them. But, I mean, even if he regresses, not going to regress to pretty much what he was for most of the season.
I'm not saying he will regress, but I think that you need more time to see it continue. Like, I think that we as Padres fans, we take like a... It took one good game of Freddie Galvis for the media to be just collectively jacking itself off on re-signing him immediately, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the fan base does this to a lesser extent than the media, but we get – and it's natural to get excited, but we get really excited over things. Like, there were people penciling Alan Cordoba in to be, you know, a slam dunk starter on this team after that April last year. It's just give it some time. Like, no one's saying they're going to be bad. But you need enough data to kind of make those decisions. And, you know, you got a guy like Franmil Reyes, who the team deemed unworthy of rostering on the 40-man over the offseason. He was off the radar completely for prospect rankings. And that means that not only did the Padres not value him, but, you know, all of the prospect writers that scout and watch these guys, and no one was interested. He wasn't – and also every team had the opportunity to take him on – you know, for what, $25,000, and chose not to. So
nothing.
He's a good story. He shows a lot of power. I think we should wait and see if he can be more than, you know, three true outcomes kind of guy, like that has a ton of power, isn't great in the field, and let's see how he does when the pitching catches up to him, because he showed flashes of power in his first call up this year, and then he kind of fell off the table for a while, and then he got sent down. And you know, I think with all of them, there's, what, a month and a half left in the season? I think we can probably make a lot more determinations on how they're doing come the end of September. I mean, do you agree, or are you excited? Are you really excited?
Well, I do think there is something to be said about, like, getting the proper sample size. And at least Hedges and Framuel, I feel they've had a lot less track record. But at least with Renfro, I'm more excited with him. Just, he seems to be recognizing pitches a lot better and making better decisions and having better swings in general. And I don't want to slip over to the side of, he's passing the eye test right now. But I do think there's a difference when we see him take, like, 0-2 pitches that, like, are change-ups that started in the zone but then moved out at the tail end of the pitch. And he takes those. And then I think that was, like, what happened. He got that grand slam. I do think that's significant, and at least not something that's likely to... It's not something like regresses if he actually learned that kind of skill.
I agree, and kind of building off that, you know, the thing about how, you know, the pitchers can catch up sometime after, you know, watching enough video and kind of studying for flaws in the swing, the things that Hunter Renfro has improved on, you know, he's taken walks, right? That was the issue last year. He just had an ungodly, awful walk ratio last year, and this year it's improved, and that's not really something that is due to, you know, like pitchers not exploiting him or anything. It's like that's like an approach change and maybe even a skill improvement of I don't know, vision or whatever, anticipation, study, you know, studying up what the pitcher's arsenals are so that he can recognize those pitches. Like, there's a lot of things that could go into it that it's not really a thing that you can fluke into, right? Like, it's an actual change. So I think I'm with you that the improvement in Hunter Renfro out of those three is the one that I'm buying the most.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, I have to honestly say, I thought about this the other day. I watched a little bit of the Red Sox-Yankees series. And, like, just looking at, like, Aaron Judge and Giancarlo Stanton, like, they're just huge people in general, right? Just, like, absolutely shredded. And I feel like that's, like, a very specific kind of body type. Like, Mike Trout has that same kind of, like, that body type. Does that make sense to you? Have you noticed that, too? Because what I'm trying to get at is that I feel like Renfro can, like, it kind of has that look to him already. And I know this sounds very much more like I'm just talking about the eye test, but is that something that makes sense to you?
That Hunter Renfro is easily comparable to Mike Trout, Giancarlo Stanton, and Aaron Judge? Yes, of course. That's very positive.
Don't forget, we're being
positive.
In the
spirit of positivity, yes. I'm guessing you mean type of what? Super strong?
Yeah, super strong, essentially. Franmil was kind of like this, but I don't think he's as, like... I mean, I guess he does have ridiculous strength. I guess both of them.
You know, let's be honest. Most baseball players have ridiculous strength compared to you and me, right?
Yeah.
They're professional athletes. So, I mean, the standard's a little higher. The thing with Hunter Renfro, too, I think people forget, like, he's a top prospect. Like, there was consensus that he was a top 100 prospect in baseball. So, to me, it was a little weird that people were ready just to push him out the door. And not just, I'm not talking Padres Twitter. Like, if you listen to the quotes from back in spring training, Andy Green and AJ Preller were pretty ready to just push Hunter Renfro out the door back then. And so, I mean, I think that's a huge thing. If Hunter Renfro can play okay in the field and cannot strike out all the time and actually take walks, and that turns him into a better hitter, like, this is huge for the future of the team. Mm-hmm. How many years of control does he have? He's got 4 more years of control after this?
Oh, it's like 2024, right? No, wait, that's gonna be 6 years. Something like that, yeah.
Well, they bought a year by sending him down last year, so... but regardless, like, he's a possible piece for the future, and real positives for the team, I think that of the three, Renfro's is the most likely to be real, and that makes me happy.
Right, and it's really nice too, because I know at least Padres Twitter have had this discussion before about, like, you know, is there really that much to be excited with our outfield? And this is especially back before Margot really started to, like, change his approach. It was like, you know, back in near the beginning of the year, an outfield options of Will Myers, Margot, Jankowski, Renfro. God, they probably had, like, Matt Caesar on the time right then.
Don't forget left fielder
Jose Perella, and even Franchi. Like, there's definitely some interesting names, and obviously a good amount of upside in pretty much all of those players. I mean, not Perella or Caesar, but right now it really seems like our outfield can actually settle into an outfield that will be fine to start for a team that plans to be very competitive.
Well, in an outfield with some, like, you know, modicum of actual success at the big league level.
Right.
I mean, Marver and I have talked about it, and this isn't meant to denigrate a guy like Franchi Cordero, who's obviously exciting, but he's never actually...
I love Franchi.
Of course, yeah. He's exciting, right? But he hasn't actually produced that well. Mm. You know, in any of his time, and a lot of that's due to major deficiencies in his fielding, which that's not a new thing. Like, he's not a good fielder. He hasn't been a good fielder at any position he's ever played. And the metrics show that his fielding is so awful that it almost totally cancels out any offensive contributions he has. And so, I mean, that can obviously be improved. It doesn't help that he's, mm-hmm. you know, sitting out the rest of the season, but you know, it's nice to see players like Hunter Renfro that are given the opportunity and actually do produce positively for the team. And that's the kind of track record that you can project out into the future when you're making personnel decisions. It's hard with a guy like Franchi where you're like, well, he shows these flashes, he's got the physical tools. He'll have a good game here and there. But he's a question mark in the end. And this team is getting to a point in its rebuild where question marks aren't good enough.
Aren't good enough, yeah. You're being very positive here. It's wonderful.
That's positive, right? You know, you have a guy...
I'm serious.
There are spots to fill, and we need to fill them. We can't fill them with question marks. And as of now, I think if Hunter Renfro continues this through September, that's one less question mark going forward, because mm-hmm. he's not a cleanup hitter, right? He's not going to be your superstar. But he's a really, really good number six hitter. Like, he keeps producing like this, and he's a number six hitter on any playoff team, or at least as good as, you know, a number six hitter on a playoff team.
As good as you need him to be. Right. Yeah. So what about one last possible positive? How do you feel about how Lucchese's been doing recently?
Well, there's nothing to complain about, right? The metrics are very weird on Lucchese, and I don't know that much about this particular metric because Eno Saris didn't release a lot of the background of how it's calculated. But did you read his article a few months ago on Command Plus?
I might have skimmed it.
So, I mean, basically, and we've talked about it a little bit, but it's a measure, you know, just to measure command. And Joey Lucchese performs very, 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 very poorly on it. Like, he's like a bottom 15 performer on it, but he's getting results. And so all I have is the number. Like, I know what he scores on it. I don't know what it means or how it's calculated or what he could do to improve it. But, you know, that stuff is a little alarming combined with you know, he relies on deception and, you know, he doesn't throw that hard, but it's hard to argue with results, right? I mean, he's not our ace, but he's looking like he's a pretty good 3 or 4 or 5 pitcher, right?
Right. I mean, and we talked about this a little before. I do think it's fine to take some of what, and right after his last start, what, like, Austin Hedges and Andy Green said about, like, you know, maybe he didn't have his best stuff today, but he still got it done. I mean, maybe there is something to be said about effectively wild. I don't know. But you're right. The results are there right now, so cool.
And he's got a pretty big body of work at this point, right? I mean, by the end of the year, there'll be quite a body of work on him. And
right, I mean, he's been on the team since opening day, pretty much. He, like, started the second game, so this is a full season for Joey Lucchese, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, some injuries.
Right, but, you know, yeah, he did have the injury in the middle, but it's not a small sample. I mean, it's getting beyond small sample size, right? And so if he continues this through the year, I think it's pretty safe to pencil him in as, you know, the number 3 or number 4 pitcher next year. I don't know what he would be on a playoff team, on a real quality playoff team. He'd be a great 5.
Wait, you actually would think there'd be 3 pitchers above Joey Lucchese starting next season? Who do you think is going to be above him?
We're talking next season? I'm talking of quality.
Oh, okay. All right.
I mean, he might be the opening day starter, right?
Yeah, probably.
Who else is there? Really?
Not Lauer. That would take Brett Kennedy taking it together. I'm getting it together. Lauer probably having him come back and do well. And Nick's also doing great. Or maybe one of, like, Paddock, Allen, or Quantrill starting the year.
But they wouldn't be opening day starters.
For some reason,
none of those guys would be opening day starter.
No, not at all. But we're getting negative, but he's a positive. This is a good thing.
Yeah, and I think we're breaking news that Joey Lucchese could be the opening day starter next year.
Yeah. Oh, man. We need to do that little... God, that's stupid. I know. I'm glad. I've been... It's taken me some time to catch up with some Padres Twitter drama and podcasts. But I think I was also the first one to try to stop miserable Padre fan from doing that stupid bit of trying to predict the, like, Tyson Ross trade. Well, let's just do that.
Yeah, so, every day.
You've heard it here first, here. Joey Lucchese, opening day starter.
Hey, you know who could throw a wrench in this plan? Clay Dick.
Who?
AJ wisely signed to a 2-year contract last year. So, you know, I don't know if you realize this, Chad, but leadership is very important. It can make up for a lot of mediocre to bad performances.
Well, this leads us to one of our other positives, which is Freddy Galvis just leading the team to victory recently.
Hey, look. On a positive note, Freddy Galvis has contributed 0.5 wins against replacement. And you know what? That, I don't know if you're studying math up at college, Chad, but 0.5 is actually greater than 0.
Wow.
Which means that he is better than replacement.
You know, I'm pretty sure that means he's the best potted shortstop since Khalil Green. So,
well, I like how everyone,
forgets
that Khalil Green was never an all-star and Everett Cabrera was an all-star. We've just totally wiped the history of Everett Cabrera, who, if we're being honest, was really the beginning of our Rule 5 success.
A mania.
Like, he was an incredible Rule 5 winner, right? Even
I remember looking up, like, a few years ago when they did that first Rule 5 mania before the Allen Cordoba year. And, like, you can look up a Wikipedia page of the most, like, notable Rule 5 picks, and he's basically the top of the list.
Well, I mean, it's always, like, Johan Santana was one of them.
Yeah.
Like, Shane Victorino was one, although I think he doesn't count because he got sent back. But, Everett Cabrera was a good player. He was a really good shortstop for a year or two. 2 years, really. He was actually even good the year of the Rule 5, where he went, I think he was in high A and went straight to the major leagues. And he produced.
Right. I mean, I actually also wanted to kind of answer a question. I remember, I think a few weeks ago, the Kev Fit did a podcast, and they're basically asking themselves, like, you know, they all idolized, you know, Tony Gwynn and Hoffman, and that was the reason they were talking about it. And so they weren't really sure, like, you know, what the youth of today, what Padre player they would idolize and, like, you know, like. And I probably categorize myself in who they are wondering who's my favorite Padre player, like, that I think about as my childhood, and it's Khalil Green for that year and a half that he
realized. Which was the same answer as their guest in that episode, right? They had like the USB, yeah, whatever, newspaper editor.
Or I don't remember.
But I mean, his answer was Khalil Greene as well. Like, Khalil Greene defines a generation, basically.
Right. Oh, God. Positivity, come on.
Khalil Greene is good. That is positive. Everyone loves Khalil
Greene. Well, he was good for the year and a half he was here, and then
People forget, I remember seeing all, just people like Khalil Greene, right? Because he kind of looked unique, and he wasn't a glory hog. And he
reminds me of Freddie Galvis, wow.
Speaking of launching,
Jankowski.
Marvin and I talked about how, only a few years ago, improving your launch angle was just called endlessly uppercutting the ball. And I remember with Khalil Greene, everyone would just complain that he struck out, he was swinging for the fences. If you could only just make contact, Khalil, you don't need to hit a home run. He's always uppercutting it. And like, now we'd be celebrating this as part of the launch angle revolution. But
yeah, very modern, young shortstop.
Right, and maybe so. I didn't live here at the time, but I don't think there was a huge outcry when he got traded, was there?
Oh, because he started to suck, and then, like, he had, like, some weird issues, I think, like, personal issues, and he went away for a while.
I think that was after his last season, right? Because he punched the ice box or the wall or whatever.
I don't know. Really? That's hilarious.
That's real. I think he punched something. He broke his like, hand, and then that was kind of it here. But anyways, well, that's the man you are idolizing from that era. That's interesting.
So, how about another positive, which is that we've solved our third base conundrum.
It's done. We have one of
you really have to give credit to Preller and his staff. I'm sorry. No. It's fine, right? There's no reason not to. I get it. I guess put me in the camp that likes it, because why not?
Well, I mean, we talked about
keep the Padres weird? Like, that was what this should be.
Well, we talked about the laboratory, right? I mean,
yeah.
I do think it's weird that they're throwing him out into the major leagues after having, what, one put out at high A and then a few infield drills, but...
Did you see the video of his put out also?
You know, it's not... he could use a little, the Tom Emanski video on fielding third base. Maybe learn some fundamentals, and like...
Well, I think the inverted fielding... The glove was the wrong direction. I think that just really points to how athletic he is and how it's not a problem that we can just shove him in the third base.
And, to Will's credit, we can't comment enough how positive it is that he's willing to do it, right? And he's like, flushing his prime years. No, not flushing. He could be flushing his prime years down the toilet by being so willing on this. I mean, it's good, right? You want a player that's willing to do whatever to help the team win. Right? That's good. Because a lot of players would complain.
Like,
everyone talked about Matt Kemp.
We have a lot of evidence.
Remember Matt Kemp, where they'd be like, well, we can't possibly move him out of his position in right field and move him to left field. It would hurt his feelings. And, like, Will Myers is, like, the antithesis of that, which is good. That's a good thing.
Right. I was, like, for a player that we've had a lot of evidence that his mental state really impacts how well he performs, especially offensively, I am very on board with giving him a new position every other month to try to figure out.
That's how you combat... I've got a child. Like, this is how you combat short attention spans, is you continually change...
Give him more to do.
Yeah, you change the situation, and then you throw something different in front of them, right?
Right.
Before they explode. It's a ticking time bomb, and you just need to be on your game. And like...
Since Myers has done pretty well at the plate, like, this last couple months, I think that's indicative that he's 100% ready to take on a new challenge in his career.
Yeah, and let's be honest, he's been very open that he gets bored in the field, right? This is not slander. He said it as recently as like a month ago. He mentioned that he gets bored in the outfield sometimes. And
man, remember when Will's uncle kind of stared at us and then bombarded us after the podcast with Doss Seth?
Yes, when he ambushed us for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, and remember his dog? That was so weird.
I don't think I ever wrote about this or anything. I think I tweeted about it, but I didn't...
No, I think you just tweeted about it, and we didn't really talk about it either.
I didn't want to make family strife. Like, I didn't want Will to call his uncle up and be like, why'd you talk to this dickhead?
Yeah. I mean, well, we know Will, he's going to do that now, because he's listening to us
Of course,
now,
yeah.
So.
Well, it's in Wayne Partello's daily report to Ron Fowler on Padres Twitter.
God, man, I hope we make his daily text to Ron Fowler. That'd be awesome.
So I mean, it's formal. It's formal now. Like, the lineup came out for, you know, on the day that we're recording this against the Angels, that Will Myers is going to be hitting second and playing third base. He said,
"Yeah, you know, I'm actually going to the game tonight, and I was really bummed because, you know, this is. I also looked at the rotation schedule. You know, Clayton Richard is the last holdover from the at least somewhat interesting young starting pitchers. So I missed Nix. I missed Lucchese. I missed Brett Kennedy. I missed Walker Lockett, although that might have been a good thing.
I wouldn't say you were missing him. Am I right?
No. Positive. Positive. So Clayton Richard's pitching, but at least be able to see Will Myers. And that I'm actually interested. I think it'll be fun.
It is fun, right? It's like when position players pitch. It's fun, right?
Right. Everyone's, you know, it's so crazy that that is all of a sudden becoming like such a huge issue, like in the national media. Because the Padres have been doing it forever. Like, Alexi Amarisa did that in, like, 2014, I swear.
Oh, you mean 0.00 career ERA, Alexi Amarisa?
Hoffman, I can't make a pun right now, but... God.
This made me think...
We started the track.
We don't have many good Andrew Cashner memories here, but do you remember the time where Andrew Cashner was pitching? They brought in another pitcher... Wait, is this how they did it? Did they bring in another pitcher, move Cashner to left field, and then move him back to pitcher?
Yeah.
I have that right? Like, that's...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I feel like that was, like, against the Cubs at Wrigley, or maybe that was just because the Cubs kind of did something like that in, like, the playoffs that year, too.
That's baseball fun, right?
Yeah, that's great. Let's... God, I would love to see, like, Phil Hughes try to, you know, shack some balls in center field.
Yeah, I'd pay to see that, you know?
And you think he's listening to us, too? You think he's listening to all the podcasts, though, now that he's, like, just hanging out at home, I guess?
I don't know. I don't think I ever got in. Like, it's interesting that he went on a podcast and stuff, you know, probably against Wayne Partello's wishes.
Oh, man, the jokes that that's why he's got cut just, they get me every time.
The best were the comments I would get when I tweeted out, this is just retribution from Wayne Partello, and I would get stuff like, where was this reported? Where can I read about this?
Yeah,
and then I have to respond in all caps, it was a joke.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I love explaining jokes. It's the best part of telling jokes.
That's how you know they're actually funny.
It's really great, yeah. Myers at third, I think we can probably assume that it's not going to be great. Right, it's gonna.
Yeah,
it's fine as long as it doesn't affect his hitting. Like, I'm okay. I'm okay with the laboratory experiment. Right, it's fine. Just run him out there every day.
I'm not sure it won't impact his hitting though, but it's fine. That's why we're doing this right now.
Yeah,
it doesn't
matter. They only gave him like a month to really be awful in center field in 2015. So I mean, you give him a month. Let's see how it goes. You know. Probably poorly.
What do we have to lose, really?
Yeah, there's nothing to lose. If he's that bad, then you can just move him out to the outfield, and now you do have a complete outfield for next year, assuming Renfroe continues, right? Then there's zero question marks in the outfield. And that's fine.
Which is pretty crazy to think about that we're pretty much at that stage. But
yeah, like, Will Myers was a good outfielder.
He was very good this year. I mean, if he wasn't injured a lot of it, like, I feel like he could have been a pity all-star selection had we traded Brad Hand earlier.
Yeah, I agree. And that's good. That's one less question. Like we said, like, erasing question marks is arguably one of the biggest positives that we could have out of this season.
Right. I mean, well, it's what the season had to be in the first place. Like, if we just had continued to start, we didn't release Tyson Ross and we just kept on starting him, and if we don't release Clayton Richard, then what are we actually gaining out of this season at the major league level? Barely anything. But
yeah, really nothing. I mean, you could argue Renfroe, I guess, but like, yeah, it's.
I mean, yeah, I guess, but he was already like, that's not something extra they done this season. You know, he was gonna start. He was gonna be the opening day starter. He was gonna get his time.
Right.
But
yeah, no.
I mean,
I'm totally
so what about third base in general? If not Will, who? What are we gonna do about that? And be positive.
Okay, so I don't know if this is the cool thing to say, but I don't think Villanueva is that bad.
Really?
Do you think he's that bad? I think that there's been...
I'm not really excited with him.
Well, I think he was very bad, especially on the field. He was very bad in the beginning.
And did you hear? I mean, he has elite defense now, so...
I think it's gotten better.
Oh, yeah, it's definitely gotten better, but, I mean...
He's not a total...
Some rhetoric from, there, but, from, I think, AC.
Yeah, I mean, he's another guy that... I mean, all he can do is pull the ball, right? Like, almost every one of his home runs is a deep pull to left field, right? All his impressive ones are, like, into the Western Metal Supply Building. He can certainly do that well, but it's generally not a great approach to just try to pull everything. Like, eventually, your luck runs out. But, I mean, do you think they should sign someone? Like, Moustakas is going to be a free agent again. He's tagging the ball, right? But he's also...
No, I'm fully on the Edson Potts
train. He has a lot of leadership skills from being on the world champion Royals.
Prestige value.
So much prestige value. And he's going to be on the playoff team Brewers this year. That's all kinds of prestige value.
I have two words for you. Prestige.
Who?
That's all you need. Never mind. I'm fully on board the Hudson Potts train. I think he's a top 100 prospect.
But he's like 2 years away from even coming up.
Yeah, but I don't care.
He's fine. He's good. I like Hudson Potts. He's very exciting to watch. But
so are we trying to ask the question? What are we going to do at third base for the next year and a half? Or are we asking what are we going to do at third base for when we want to be good?
I don't know. Look, Hudson Potts is good. I've gone on record as saying I don't get excited for guys until they really kill it in Double A. So I'm not really ready to declare. I don't like the thing where we take.
I thought the biggest jump was from single A to advanced A.
No, the biggest jump is to double A.
I guess not for hitters. Yeah.
Well, in general, it's double A. I mean, double A is the demarcation for serious and not serious. And so I'm always a little apprehensive when people are like, "Yeah, check out Estery Ruiz. He's
the AZL batting almost 400."
Yeah, or I mean, even this year in Fort Wayne, like. He's WRC plusing what, like 110 there, and so
steals a ton of bases though.
He does, yeah. But I mean, keep in mind how awful the catch. Like, if you watch low level baseball, like the catchers are really awful. The defense is awful. Like, you can tell a different. It's easy to distinguish a lower quality of play. Like you go to Tri City, you see Tri City's play. It's jarring almost. It's like watching La Costa Canyon baseball.
But not watching like Carlsbad baseball, because that's way better.
Well, yeah, I mean, the last time I went to the La Costa game, they played Carlsbad and won like 17-0. So, you know, that's cool.
Yeah, well, how's your number one overall pick going, huh, Mr. Moniak?
It doesn't matter. He's cashing checks.
You know what's actually really funny is I know a couple people that have played against him and that like kind of sort of know him. Apparently, he's a douche, so...
Well, look, I don't doubt it. Look,
there we go.
I remember his interview on Scott and BR, like the day he was drafted, and he talked about Scott asked him, "What are you going to do with all this money?" And he's like, "I don't know. I already drive a BMW." Like,
well, yeah, you know, I also heard that the Phillies bought him a car, which someone told me that, and it's like I really don't think they can do that, right? Like, especially I think it was before they drafted him, anyways. They can't do that, right?
Oh, you mean as like a way to skirt signing bonus rules? That's interesting, actually. I haven't heard
that.
I mean,
that. What else would it be? Like, how can you claim it's anything else if you buy this prospect a car
like
they're about to draft?
You can't give someone like their slot bonus money and then be like, "Oh, yeah, and on the side, here's some gold bullion." And then not count that into your draft bonus total? So, yeah, that's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe, what if we just, like, release this investigation that the Phillies were skirting the signing bonus rules? You heard it here first.
Yeah, you heard it from Harold James Preller himself and Chad. Breaking news. We're following
Breaking
James
news.
Clark's, you know, his...
Right, the scoop.
Yeah, Scoops Clark.
Scoop City.
Yeah, so anyways, like, Hudson Potts... He's good, right? He's really good. We're all excited, but I don't like the thing where we take like Estery Ruiz and we're like, well, let's just tack on 2.5 years, and then we might as well pencil him in as Alfonso Soriano in 2021. Like, it's just that easy.
That was a good Dennis Lynn article, though.
It's good. I mean,
but it's gonna feed some.
I guess we're ignoring that his numbers don't really look like Alfonso Soriano's right now, but still, it just.
Also, haven't you kind of taken a step back from last season?
Yes, yeah. Can we just pump the brakes? That's like my general thing is like, let's pump the brakes a little bit. Give it a little time. Like, we don't want to be the guys that are like, hey, if this and 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 this happen, you know, this team could be near 500 next year. Like, this is what we went through for the entire Josh Burns era, where they wouldn't do that much and they'd get Seth Smith. And then in the interviews, they'd be like, you know, if everyone does their, you know, 99th percentile performance, this team could really go somewhere. And sometimes it happens, like 2010, sometimes it happens. But it's not a great way to plan. Like, in general, like for life planning, it's not a great strategy to just take the best possible outcomes and then project your decisions off of those outcomes. It's usually better to be conservative, plan for the worst, hope for the best, and like plan out your life that way. Like, if you throw all your money in a stock and you're like, well, I'm really optimistic on this technology and it's really going to take off, like, that's a good way to go bankrupt. So you gotta plan for the worst.
Something else to be positive about, I guess, is that we didn't trade Mejia and Urias away.
That is positive. Yeah.
So that is very much a positive. However, God, why did we even have to consider it? I'm sorry.
Chris Archer. We don't know that it was considered for sure, yeah, right? Like, we don't know that was the offer.
I read an article. I think James Clark wrote an article and was like, I don't know. I didn't see this, but like, apparently Preller said he would not trade Panic for anyone in the Rays organization. Is that true?
I don't know. You read it. Yeah, I think the only thing I read on the topic was just the rumors of what the Rays were asking for, which a lot of people hear and they're like, well, was AJ offering that? And like, the answer is obviously no, because they didn't accept the offer. But we don't know a lot of times, right? Like, we don't know what the offers were. We don't know what was offered for Tyson Ross, if anything. We don't know what the Padres offered. So it's hard to say.
Yeah. All right, so to another positive, to quickly wrap it up, Galvis has been a big positive, actually, not a little positive, although he is short.
I don't know how much I can do. Galvis is, look, here's the thing with Galvis. Our expectations are so low. And like, I tweeted it today that like, Padres fans have normalized a 0-1 WAR guy as being average, right? And you look up what the definitions for WAR are. Like, a 0-1 WAR guy is somewhere between a AAA depth player, which is replacement level, to somewhere around a bench player, right? Isn't that about what 1 WAR is? Freddie Galvis is at 0.5.
Zero WAR was the Quad A person.
Zero WAR is the Quad A, like AAA depth kind of player.
Okay.
1 WAR, I think, is a bench player. 2 WAR is an average starter. Average. Right. Like, other teams that are good look at a 2 WAR player, and they're like, how can we improve on this guy? Like, he's pretty mediocre. But Padres fans are like, are you guys watching Yangervis Solarte? He's so good. He's like a star out there. You know, he's pulling like 1.9 WAR. And like, to us, that's great, because we have so many players that are negative
WAR.
Garbage, yeah. Right. And so, like, at shortstop especially, we're like, well, he's got 0.5 WAR, but he makes – this was an AC comment. He was like, you know, he doesn't make the dazzling sports center plays, but he makes all the routine plays. And for other teams that are good, like, making the routine plays, that's the cover charge to get into the club, right? It's not
right. –
That's not the show that you're going to see. Like, the basic,
that's the reason it's called routine, is that it needs to be done. Like,
yeah,
well, what makes people special is they get the non-routine things.
Right. It's the basic expectation to make the major leagues is to make routine plays, right? And if you can't make
and a good defender, plays, a good defender, like Freddie Galvis is a good defender.
He's good.
But there are other good defenders, and you only have to be good to be doing the things he's doing. It also helps that he hasn't been injured at all, and so he's played every single game, which they also make a big deal about. But
I mean,
you know, I think Tatis can have the same, if not better, with like the arm kind of defense than Freddie Galvis right now.
Yeah, and you know, there's all this debate, and I actually talked with I had a nice lunch with John Conniff last week, and we talked about a little about Javi Guerra, and John's pretty clear that Javi Guerra can't hit. We all know Javi Guerra can't hit. Anyone that's been to like Elsinore when he was there knows he can't hit. But he's pretty good in the field. And the thing is, Freddie Galvis is a no-hit, all-glove shortstop. Like, you can find those guys. Like, there was one that was just cut, like, two weeks ago. Like, Echeverria is a not very good hitting, good glove shortstop with similar metrics to Freddie Galvis. And he was literally waived and picked up for nothing. So it's like, okay, well, if Freddie Galvis will take a contract for some reason, like, first off, it should be noted, he's at the age where this is his one chance at getting a multi-year contract, right? And so I have a hard time, everyone says extend him, I have a hard time believing his agent would advise him to sign, you know, a one-year, $3 million extension without testing the market. And B, if he's really going to sign a contract for 1 year and $1 million, $2 million, $2 million, like, that's basically what the Padres paid Alexi Amarista to stay here. That should tell you.
I mean, maybe he's not that good. Like, well, I don't know. Just because fans think he's good doesn't mean teams are going to value him that same way.
We should maybe note that Alexi Amarista had as good of a year as Freddie Galvis had. So, you know, going into that 2016 year.
I realized, because I watched the Cubs-Nationals game, Trey Turner is good, right?
Yes.
He has a 3.5 WAR right now. That is a good player. But he's not an all-star. But if he was on the Padres, he would be like a two, maybe three-time all-star, because he would be the clear choice for our representative.
Oh, easily,
like,
yeah.
Like, but he's on a good team, and so he's hasn't been an all-star at all, despite, you know, him like almost leading the leagues in plate appearances and having like a .350 on-base percentage. Even though, actually, he's kind of like more of a league average hitter.
Well, I mean, this kind of goes back to it where, to Padres fans, a 3.5 WAR player is a superstar, right? And
other exactly. Teams, he would be our superstar.
Yeah, a 3.5 WAR player is a pretty decent 5 or 6 hitter on the team. So, you know, we'll get there, right? That's the positivity going here. Like, it looks, we're hoping that we will get there. But I do think it's important that some fans take a look at what we always fall in love with guys that are here. And to be a World Series caliber team, you need drastic improvements. You can't have a 0.4 WAR shortstop. Like, you need better than that.
Right.
So.
No, what really, can you help me be positive for something? I've really struggled to not be sad about it, but if Tatis isn't a superstar, are we just screwed?
Marvel, like, would say yes.
I'm starting to feel like that's a yes.
I think, I don't know where the other superstars are coming. There's surprises everywhere, right? And to be honest, to have a starter that, maybe the most likely thing is that we have a Kershaw or something, you know, a starter that's a 6 or 7 WAR pitcher.
You know, remember when Mackenzie Gore got drafted, AC declared him that he must become a Kershaw or he's a disappointment.
Yeah.
So.
Well, that's the kind of measured reporting that we're used to from Kevin Acey.
Right.
Well, Chad, I think that we very successfully produced an hour of generally positive content here.
Yeah, I think this was, we can definitely stamp this podcast with a success and, you know, be happy, feel good about ourselves, which is what we care
because,
about.
Because, yeah, and to be honest, there's some good things happening. And you're going to have fun at the game tonight. I'm going to have fun watching Will Myers play third. I don't know where you're sitting, but
it's going to be interesting. I'm actually on the third base line. I'm kind of,
you know,
like,
what I would like to watch? I don't want to watch him making plays because they show that on TV. I just want, you know, there was a video yesterday of him just setting up for the play. Can you just take like 20 of those? I just want to see Will out there. Like, does he draw pictures with his cleats in the dirt to like pass the time or like what is?
Yeah, I'll be watching
there?
Him intently. I am excited to see because if you read, I think the Jay Posner article about, like, what, you know, Will has claimed he's not worried about the ground balls. What he's really trying to figure out is, like, where he needs to be during certain plays. And I agree. I think that's going to be interesting. It could lead to a very disastrous and widely spread around, like, game-losing situation on a relay, which would be very, very memorable baseball. So is it wrong if I root for that when I go to the game tonight?
Is that how you derive baseball fun? Because if so, then sure.
It's how I've done it the last couple of years watching the Padres. So
that's fine.
Hey, I want to go to a game and say something happened. Because for the past couple of years, if you go to a Padres game, barely anything happens. And you barely remember. Because nothing really significant happens during the game. And you won't be able to say, hey, look, I went to the game. How cool would it be to say? It's like, yeah, I went to this game on this, like, you know, SportsCenter not top 10 play of Will Myers, like, completely just, like, missing a relay. That would be fun.
You know what? That would be fun. I'm going to look forward to that also. I'm with you. And then I hope that there's a nice wave.
At you know, see, and yeah, I'll do some flossing, and that's how you know it's me on TV.
Yeah, that'll be perfect. All right, Chad, so I guess we can expect you back on the podcast in another 6 to 7 months. Is that good? Is that right?
That sounds about right. Yeah, you know, actually, maybe sooner. A little tease, a little sprinkle. But maybe sooner.
Yeah, however, maybe you can bring the microphone to college, you know, like a normal grown-up.
I don't know. That's a bit too much responsibility for me. yeah, it'll be good.
Well, hey, it was good to have you on the podcast again. We always look forward to it. Maybe you'll write something again in another 4 months also. So yeah, thanks for coming on, Chad. It was very exciting, very positive. I'm beaming right now.
Yeah, this is a good time. Yeah. Lots of smiles all around.
Lots of smiles. Well, for another edition of the Gwyntelligent podcast, go Padres.
Go Padres.